Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence. Your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at ML on WLXG. Ask questions or comments on what you'd like Matthew to talk about on the show. Today's show is sponsored by French Lick Resort, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Play Golf Lexington, and by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome in to Backspin Golf, the 8:03 tee time from the Square Country Club here in Lexington on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. Thanks for listening. I also want to thank so many people each week make it known to me that they're listening on Sunday morning, and I very much appreciate it. This show has been a labor of love for 4 years, and the people I've met, the friendships I've made, are really incredible to me. And so I appreciate you out there listening, and I hope you're having as much fun meeting all these people as I am. Before we get started today, of course, Perry French will join me from Strixon Golf, Cleveland Golf. Amy Rogers from LPGA.com will talk to me about the Solheim Cup, which was amazing. And I want to replay an interview we did with Brandon Urban about the 100-hole hike that he did for charity. I'm just in a mood for us to talk about some good works that people are doing. But before we get to that, there are a couple of things that I want to discuss. First, this week, of course, the first of the four FedEx Cup playoffs. It's being played in Old Westbury, New York on Long Island, kind of close to where I grew up. But there was a story last week. To get into the top 125 in the FedEx Cup points list is the goal of every player during the year, because so much is at stake in these playoffs. Well, Martin Flores, who has been a touring pro since 2010, this is an incredible story. I don't think it was covered the way it should have been. At the beginning of the week, he was number 139. You have to be in the top 125. So at the Wyndham Championship last week on Sunday, he shot 63. That's right, 63 on Sunday. He made a hole-in-one on the 16th hole and then birdied 18 and got into the playoff as the last guy. Not only did he get into the playoff, and he's doing fairly well, but he got his tour card for next year because of this finish. So congratulations to Martin Flores. It's a great story. And if you haven't seen it, just go to YouTube and watch, type in Martin Flores, and you'll see his ace on the 16th hole on Sunday, which basically got him into the tournament. The birdie on 18 was icing, but congratulations to him. The other thing that happened is the U.S. Amateur. And there have been some great articles written about this. A couple of them that I read talked about that this, not the Masters, not the U.S. Open, not the PGA, which we just saw how tough that golf course was, the toughest trophy to win in golf is the U.S. Amateur. And that's because there are 312 players that start out in that tournament. The first part of it is stroke play. And after stroke play, the top 64 go into match play. And in match play, anything that can happen, doesn't matter what your ranking is. This tournament goes on for 7 days. You not only have to be good, you have to get matched against somebody that maybe is having a bad day. Anyway, Doc Redman of Clemson won it, and I'll talk more about him next week. All right, we have a great show coming up. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. It's Backspin Golf right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300.
Now, joining Matthew on Backspin Golf is Perry French, PGA professional and territory manager of Strixon Cleveland Golf.
Oh boy, am I excited. I'm really excited. I'm always excited when Perry French joins me from Strixon Golf, Cleveland Golf. and just all around great guy. But this week, we will be joining Perry's show, which is called, what did you just say? What'd
Putting
you
call? With Perry.
Putting with Perry. Hey, Kim, have you heard about this new reality show, Putting with Perry? It's got a ring to it.
Doesn't it, though?
But we're not only going to do Putting with Perry. Mm-hmm. We're going to do all kinds of different stats, right?
Right, right.
This is stat,
the year's ended.
Week. Right. The year's ended, but just remember this weekend, the first of the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Yes, and this is where you throw all stats out the window?
Correct. Oh, everybody starts, well, the top 125 exactly. Start. Throw all the stats out. But for those of us that are interested in the game of golf, this is periodically we'll say, well, the pros only make 58 or what.
Well,
but these end-of-the-year stats are really a great way to look at things.
It's a type of thing that I look to and say, you know, really, how do you measure your – how do you measure yourself against other golfers, Ty? Typically by height, right? But the fact is that you measure how you're doing. And I think a lot of times we talk about, you know, not being successful in your short game, and you beat yourself up about not making more putts and not being as good enough out of the bunker. And I say, well, take a look. What are the best players in the world doing in these conditions? And I like to look at the ones that we always talk about. First of all, is driving the golf ball. You know, that's one that everybody wants to
Hit
it long and straight, and that's the start. And then, of course, greens and regulation. These are the two barometers that kind of put you in how you're striking the golf ball.
Right.
Then thirdly is scrambling. That's, you know, getting up and down.
Which
and
most of us, that's the one most of us deal with.
It's a very important part of the game.
Correct.
And then, of course, putting with Perry.
Yes.
Putting. And that's the key thing where a lot of players, I think, find themselves say, oh, I putt pretty good. I don't need to practice my putting. And then when we start analyzing your rounds of golf and why you shoot 85 instead of 79, What is the problem?
Putting.
Yes. And this is where why the guy on the pro who wins this week on tour, what is he probably most best at this week?
Well, he's going to be right up at the top in putts.
Yes.
Yes.
Putts made,
distance.
Know, the strokes gained, putting, right. All these, you know, the stats.
Okay, now hold on. Time out. I'm going to stop you along the way because once you get going, you're like a freight train.
Absolutely. Runaway.
A runaway freight train. Explain to people listening that may not know, that's a crucial stat on the PGA Tour. What does strokes gained putting mean?
Well, first of all, it's done each and every event that's being played. So it's a live barometer of how players are competing against each other, and they do them in all categories for driving and greens and reg and scrambling and all that. But the strokes gained putting is based on a very simple equation. Most tour players, the average tour player makes one out of two putts from 8 feet. So
that's, say that again.
The average tour player, the average is one out of two or 50% from 8 feet of putts.
I'll say this again. I've said it before. Then why do I get so upset when I miss an 8-foot putt?
There you go. That's
the best players in the world are making one out of two.
Right.
And I miss one, and I'm the worst golfer in the world.
And so that equation is we're playing
you,
in the same group, or we're playing five holes apart, or one morning and playing in the afternoon. I make an 8-foot putt, I get a half a stroke on the plus side for strokes gained putting. If I miss an 8-foot putt, I get a minus a half a stroke.
Okay.
And basically, that's the stats. And they have them for different lengths.
Right.
Okay, so if you roll in a 20-footer, boom, you get a 1.2 strokes gained putting because of the percentage of putts made from 20 feet, about 30%. Pretty high.
Really?
Yeah, 30%. They make 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
Something
yeah.
like that.
And all those are Jordan Spieth.
Well, actually, Ricky Fowler is leading the tour this year in most
there
putting categories. And he's had a successful year in the win column, but certainly in the competition, he's been around and competing every week to win.
Okay.
So to start with some numbers, driving distance, how long do you think the longest tour average drive is on tour? How far are they hitting that ball?
I would say
roll and carry. It's
312.
318.
Okay.
Rory McIlroy.
Huh.
Tour average, though. What do you think the tour average for the rest of the field is on these driving stats?
Well, you got guys like Kevin Kisner, who I saw
He doesn't hit short compared to most, but yeah.
Yeah, but still, I saw him. There was a hole on Thursday night. I was watching the first round at Wyndham, and somebody got up and hit a 3-iron. The bunker was 293 to the bunker in the fairway. he hit a 3-iron right to the edge, front edge of the bunker. Mm-hmm. And Kisner got up and hit his driver and was 10 yards short of the bunker.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say the tour average is 288.
Wow. 291. So
okay.
You're, you know, all that mathematic gyration there was good.
It
was
smart.
Great. It was good.
Okay.
It was all right. So greens and regulation, top on how many players hit how many greens. So we always talk, you know, the short game, the importance of a short game. How many greens and regulation? What is the tour leader stat right now? Is at the end of the year is what? How many? What's his percentage of greens and regulation?
I'm gonna say
2 out of 3 would be what? 70%.
66%.
Thank you.
Is that what it is?
That's what the answer is.
Really?
Yeah. 66% is that's the leader. And that is Kyle Stanley.
So the best players in the world only hit 2 out of every 3 greens in regulation.
So that's 12 out of 18.
Right.
On average. And that's kind of, if you think about that number, 12 is really hard to get to. As a, you know, for regular players, 12 is
but see, even that, like if I hit 12 out of 18 greens in a round, mm-hmm. I would think it would, for me, it's a great round, but I wouldn't think that's any good for a pro. Like, I would be thinking, you got to hit 14, 15.
Well, then, again, this is average, right?
Right.
So, you know,
no, you have better days. Right. I get that. But, all right,
14,
still surprising
one day, 10
to me.
The next, the average is 12.
See, you know, you're a math guy. I can't.
Scrambling. This is the ability to save par on any type of condition, whether it's a wedge from 40 yards or a bunker shot. It's
right. Somewhere off the green, you get it on the green.
Up and down scenario.
Up and down from wherever.
What's that percentage, leader?
First of all, your condescending tone right there.
What's that percentage, leader? What's the number? I want an answer.
See? I want an answer. All right, Professor. Professor, putting with Professor Perry. I'm going to say scrambling, the percentage is 64%.
Gosh, you're very good. 66% again.
Ah.
And then
Kim's excited for me.
But the tour average is 57. So this is a
okay.
You know,
so again, here I am, and you've played with me.
Yeah.
I'm just off the green. I chip it up, not to 3 feet, to 10 feet. I miss the putt. I make a bogey, and I get upset with myself.
Yes.
And you're telling me tour pros a little better than half the time get it up and down.
And how many hours are you practicing a week on your short game?
Oh, I'm 7, 8, 10 minutes.
Okay, so that's where most people fall. That's a good perspective on put yourself in. If you're devoting the time and you want to focus on those parts of your game, you can improve your stats. You might go from 3 out of 10, 30% on your scrambling to 5 out of 10 and getting closer. That's the type of things you got to look for when you're talking about practicing.
But that will improve your scores every time you play.
Right.
Every time.
All right, putts per round. Here's where we're getting to the final stage. Putts per round.
No, wait.
What is leading the tour on total putts per round? What's the average?
Are we entering putting with Perry?
We're getting close.
Okay, close. All right. I'm sorry. I'm excited about this.
We're going to get out of time, so I want to get to the final stage.
I told you, Kim. This is his show now. He's finally taken over.
Yeah.
Say that again. What was the question?
Total putts per round average.
Total putts per round. I'm going to say, 29.
27.95, Wesley Bryan. Pretty strong. Guess what the number 125 putts per round player is? 29.2. So less than 1.5 shots between the first and the 125th player.
Now, this is really interesting because if people want to know, like, that guy sucks. He's 123rd on tour. If he made 1.5 putts more per round, he could be right up at
6 shots, right?
I mean,
6 shots over 4 rounds. That's huge.
This is a huge
variance if it's every day.
Okay, we got time for this. Peter Jacobson who's a really good friend of mine, great player on the PGA Tour for a long time. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows him.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the year was, I could be wrong, but I think in 94, Peter finished 4th on the money list that year. The next year, he dropped to 110th or something. And he told me the difference was a little over 1 shot per round.
There you go.
In his scoring average.
That
meant somewhere around 4.5 strokes higher over a tournament over 4 days. Went from 4th on the money list to, say, 110th on the money. It shows how insane.
Putting is still the premium part of the sport, and it's the one part of the game that your skill, your stature, your all the
your ego.
There's no barriers here. It's about understanding what the things you need to do to be a good putter. You can be 5 years old and be a great putter.
And it doesn't matter how big you are. It doesn't matter how old you are.
It's all related to, really, it's about confidence and understanding what you do well in the putting green. And so I'm going to jump quickly to the drill that Jackie Burke talked to.
Yes.
To David Faraday on. I'm going to give them credit because it's a great drill we've all done. And what he told Phil Mickelson to help Phil, who was struggling with his putting.
Now,
he said,
say this again. It's Jackie Burke.
Guy Jackie Burke Jr.
If you haven't seen it, on Faraday now, on HBO, right?
No,
on Golf Channel.
The Faraday Show.
He sits down with 94-year-old Jackie Burke, haven't seen it, watch it. It's great.
So Jackie tells the story that Phil comes to him for a putting tip. This is in 1999. So Jackie says, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. 3 foot, circle the cup, and I want you to make 100. And when you get done, I'll be in my office and come see me.
100 in a row.
100 in a row. Can't miss one. If you miss number 79, you got to go back to one. So Phil gets out there and he says, well, I'll get right on that, he said. So he thinks he's going to knock it out right in one bit. The fourth putt, click, goes out of the hole.
Done.
Jack goes, I'll see you in my office. And so Phil, that's his, to this day, that's his putting drill. And he was talking about, and actually excerpt back to Phil when he did the interview with Faraday, that when his routine on the golf course, playing golf, when he has that 3, 4, 5 foot putt, and I talk about it, and it's what it is. It's that putt you're looking to make at a high percentage. He uses his routine, and when he gets over the putt, it's like he's doing that drill. And so if you go from making number 82, and you walk to the next putt, and he's talking, I'm making number 83, number 84. He's talking himself through next putt.
On the putting green in a tournament.
He uses that same MO on the putting green in a tournament.
Right.
That when he gets over that 5 foot putt, it's just like making, he'll say to himself, 75. You know, because what happens as you get closer to the 100, the pressure and the intensity, even in a practice drill, if you're truly dedicated to doing this, it's going to create a lot more momentum for you to try to make it.
I'm tightening up just hearing. I'm hearing 82, and I'm tightening
up
already.
No, and how about number 99?
Oh, Lord.
You know, so that's what happens in golf, though.
Right.
The closer you get to the hole, the more your anticipation is to make those putts.
Right.
So the way to de-stress, de-anxiety, the amount of magnitude you put in that putt. If it's a putt for eagle, from 4 feet, is it any different than a putt for double bogey?
No, it's not, but it's a lot easier because, you know, even if you miss it, you're going to make a birdie.
The score is what your mind is thinking about, but quite frankly, it's still a 4 foot putt.
Right.
So the routine, as we've talked about all these times, is how to depend on your routine to build yourself through the moment. So whether you're trying to win the Masters or beat your buddy out of $2 on the golf course on the 18th hole, you still use that to fall back on.
Right.
So that's the first one in putting for Perry, is about getting yourself in that routine. Use the 100 putt drill. Hey, if you get to 78 and you miss 79, whew, that's a good start. You know? And Phil says he gets there 3 times a week, roughly.
Question. Okay, so that's Jackie Burke and Phil.
Yeah.
Like, how about for guys like me, how about starting with 50 in a row? How about starting with 10 in a row?
Listen,
that's better than nothing.
Pick your goal level, and that's right.
Okay.
And if you do 10, I guarantee you're going to turn around and try to get to 20.
Right.
And you get to 30. You know, And the next thing you know, you look at them and go, oh, I got to 65 this week. Those are things that how people, when they're trying to get better at golf, stop worrying about the big things. This is where people get stuck on, I'm going to change my swing, I'm going to do that. Folks, you don't have enough time in your day to change swings.
Right.
Learn what you do and do it as best you can and get yourself comfortable with all the nuances that make you a better golfer in the moment that you're playing golf.
And wise words.
The last piece of the puzzle, when you go to play golf, go to play golf. Don't go to play golf and try to figure out how to make the golf club swing from back to front or how you're going to impact it. If you're doing that, you might as well just turn around and go right to the driving range and go home, because you're not going to have any fun. So
these are such wise words today, but especially today.
Well, good.
And thank you so much. I'm going to.
That's a condescending thing.
No, it's not. I'm serious. I'm going to Kearney Hill later today.
You're going to have something to take your mind away from the magnitude and focus on the actual motion that you can.
Yeah.
And you can do it. You can make a 3 foot putt more often than not. And how about the 8 footer? 50%.
Okay.
Wow, that's going to take a lot of pressure off you right there.
It will. I can't wait now. I'll call you as soon as I'm done.
Okay.
Or
text me.
I'll text you from the middle of the round after I throw my 8-iron into the pond.
Yeah, I got that one time.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
All right, we've had a lot of interesting, fascinating stuff going on in the world of golf over the last couple of weeks. But just for me, yeah, we had the PGA, and that was great. We had all kinds of good stuff. The U.S. Amateur was played. But if you didn't watch the Solheim Cup, you're a moron. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. You really missed something if you didn't watch the Solheim Cup. And joining us now, we've had her on before, and she's fantastic, is the LPGA.com managing editor and host, Amy Rogers, who was there and covered it and did a great job, too. Hi, Amy.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much. Yeah, it was an awesome event.
Well, okay, let's start with, so we're playing in Iowa, of all places, and I remember when they announced a long time ago that the Solheim Cup was going to be played there. My first thought, now I know we have great golf courses all over the country, but my first thought was, okay, I don't think Iowa's a hotbed of golf. That's not how I would describe it. But this turned out to be not only a great competition, but the venue and the people were amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. I know they had a senior event back in this same area. I think it was at the same course, actually, Des Moines Golf and Country Club, a few years back, and ended up setting an attendance record. So there's something about golf in Des Moines. People love their golf. And the LPGA really seems to thrive in kind of these smaller markets mm-hmm. where, unfortunately, there isn't a ton of other competition. And so people come out in groves. We ended up setting an attendance record. I think it was over 120,000 people ended up showing up for the week, and it was insane. It was so crowded. I've never seen it like this at an LPGA event, and the fans were tremendous, but still respectful, and they made it a lot of fun, and they were just out in groves. It was a pretty awesome event and awesome atmosphere, especially on that first tee. I mean, they were out there at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and we were waiting for like 2.5 hours for play to start, and like, the stands were already packed. It was incredible.
You know what was really amazing to me, Amy, about that whole first tee thing? And it started before the competition on Friday. It was practice rounds. It was everything. What I loved about it was it didn't seem like there were 10,000 drunk people there, you know, just partying instead of about the golf. You didn't have all kinds of people yelling crazy stuff from behind the first tee. It looked like people were really there to celebrate the competition. Yes, they were rooting for the USA, but everybody was respectful with each other, and I wish every tournament could be like that.
Yeah, you mean less of the guys yelling mashed potatoes?
Yes.
And other crazy
things. And Baba Booey and all the stuff.
A little bit out there on the weekends, I think, as more people were off. But No, you're totally right. I think it was the demographic. They were definitely golf fans. They appreciated good golf. And like you mentioned with the practice rounds, I was out there on the first tee. I think it was on Thursday. And they were already like practicing their chants. So they were like really seriously into it, and hardcore golf fans that, you know, they were very respectful. I mean, it can get a little chippy. It can get a little heated, you know, in these Solheim Cups with, you know, Team Europe there competing as well, but they were absolutely respectful. I didn't see any sort of incidents during the week.
Yeah, and I long for that, and will now going forward, too. Talking with Amy Rogers of LPGA.com. All right, I want to talk about the thing that I think I'll take away from this. I think we all had a feeling the USA was the stronger side, especially when Suzanne Pettersen went out. I wasn't really worried about not retaining the cup, but some of the performances on both sides, but really, for example, Lexi Thompson, who I love anyway, her performance in this cup, especially on Sunday, she shot 29 on the back to have the match with Anna Nordqvist. It was just, it was jaw-dropping to watch.
Yeah, that was really the biggest story, I think, coming out of the event, was just the incredible golf you saw by both sides. I mean, Brittany Lincecum and Brittany Lang played together. It was on Saturday during the four balls, mm-hmm. I think. Between them, they had 15 birdies and an eagle. And it was just insane. I mean, it was some of the most incredible golf that you have seen. And Europe definitely still kept it close. I mean, they weren't, you know, completely out of it. They mm-hmm. were still playing some great golf. And honestly, the Americans just played better and they just got beat. It wasn't like Europe didn't still, you know, put up a good fight. I mean, they went out the Friday foursomes. It was 2.5 to 1.5 and Saturday foursomes, 2-2.
Right.
Saturday four ball, 1-3. And they ended up splitting the Sunday singles 6-6. It was really that Friday four ball where the Americans swept for the first time all four matches that really ended up being the difference maker. But otherwise, they were there. They were right in the hunt considering that, you know, they were really kind of the underdogs coming into the event.
And then you got to see things like Georgia Hall. I mean, some of the shots that everybody hit, but I remember I DVR'd a lot of it and would watch it at night because I was working and I didn't get to see it live. And I would watch these shots like Georgia Hall. I forget what day it was. It was her second shot on a par five, and she had an uphill lie and hit it like 268 or something onto the green. And everybody, even Judy Rankin, they were stunned by some of the power and accuracy of a lot of these players.
Yeah, and Georgia was kind of largely under the radar. She plays on the Ladies European mm-hmm. Tour. She was leading their point standings, you know, on the LET side, even though they only had a few events on their schedule this
right.
year. But we got a little preview of things to come at the Ricoh Women's British Open, where she was in the hunt. But I think people were still curious to see, with her being a rookie in the Solheim Cup, you just never know how people are going to perform in that situation,
yeah.
you know, especially from these LET events where they've only played in a couple, they don't have these huge crowds, and then to be dropped into this situation and to see her perform the way that she did, it was very impressive.
It was great. And here's the other thing about this, and I understand people are different, and I understand different events. It's not fooling around, but you can't be as loose, even under the pressure, as a lot of things that go on, especially in this Solheim Cup. But the dancing on the first tee,
yeah.
Julie Inkster and Annika dance. We had all this stuff going on the first tee that was just great.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. I was standing on that first tee on Sunday watching all the groups tee off, and everybody had been dancing, and Julie had been out there just dancing by herself most of the time on the first tee. And then Annika, who's wearing this Viking hat all day with these pigtails coming off of it, which was hilarious because we never really see Annika in this sort of role. She ends up going out there, Dancing Queen comes on,
yeah.
and Annika is dancing with Julie wearing the Viking hat on the first tee. I mean, this is something you can't see anywhere else in golf, but it was incredible. And it was great to see, you know, it just humanizes them and you
yes.
realize they're just people. It makes them more relatable and it really makes the whole event more exciting and more fun to watch.
Well, and here, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm going to tell you something about that hat that you may not know. My brother, my twin brother, Mitch, is married to a very famous Swedish, star named Ava Mattia Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
She's known as the Striking Viking.
Uh-huh.
And she has known Annika for a long time. And Annika made reference to it that she was wearing that hat to honor the Striking Viking. And that's my sister-in-law.
Oh, that's so funny. What a small world. Yeah, I heard her mention that.
Yeah.
That's so funny. You have that connection of all people.
I know. It was, and of course, my brother first put it up on Facebook and on Twitter. And when I saw it, it just made me smile so big because they don't see each other very often, but they're very good friends. And that part of it was just fantastic. Before I let you go, I have a quick question because I just saw you mentioned the LET tour, the Ladies European Tour. I saw a thing on Twitter, and I didn't get a chance to read it, about how the LPGA and even the PGA is now going to help the LET tour. Can you talk for a minute about that?
Yeah, I haven't heard too many specifics on my end as far as internally at the LPGA.
Yeah.
I actually saw some of those same stories
mm-hmm.
and So that was kind of the first that I had seen it as well. So as far as I know, it's just the LPGA, you know, generally trying to help with the LET. I don't know specifically what that'll mean.
Right.
We already have a few co-sanctioned events with them, and we added this year the Ladies Scottish Open, which I went over and covered as well. So I don't know if it'll end up being more kind of co-sanctioned events, or if the Ladies European Tour will kind of become like a Symetra Tour and a feeder to the LPGA. So unfortunately, I wish I had more information on that.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious to see how that all plays out as well. But unfortunately, I kind of know as much as you do.
No, you still know more than I do, but that's great. Well, you've had quite a run here, as you said, Scotland and Des Moines, and I hope you get a chance to relax a little, but you do such a great job, and people can follow you on Twitter at the Amy Rogers, and it's Rogers. And I can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes, and I hope I get to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye, Amy.
Bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play golf, Lexington.
Here on Backspin Golf, we always talk about the great people we have on from all over the world, really, from not only America but other countries. But now we're into something that, frankly, I don't even know how to describe it. So I'm going to let my friend Brandon Urban describe it because he did it. But I'm at a truly a loss for words. The awe that I feel for you, I am in awe of you, Brandon Urban.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, I know it doesn't mean that much, but I don't say that. Sean, have I ever said that to anybody on this show before? No. And I've had some pretty impressive people, but
right.
I am in awe of you. All right. Let's start with during the show over the last couple of years, we had Jim Colton on the show talking about the 100-hole hike idea. And we have pretty loyal listeners over the last 4 years. And so people kind of know about this. I've talked about it on our daily show. Well, we just had the 100-hole hike. Listen how I backed my way into this with you. That's awesome.
You're jumping right in.
I am. I'm jumping right in. And the idea of the 100-hole hike is to raise funds for different charities. Or I know at Ballyneal, it started with a caddy who had an accident. It was to raise money for him. And people can donate either a lump sum or by hole. They can pay a certain amount, and it all goes to charity. That's the background of this. So today, let's see, when was this? On Monday you did this?
Monday, yes.
Monday. Okay. Take it from there. You're in Minnesota now, but you went to Colorado, right, to Ballyneal?
Yeah, so the event on Monday was at Ballyneal in Holyoke, Colorado, and I've done it there the last few years. Jim Colton is a member there, and that's kind of the home of 100-hole hike. So I've been lucky enough to be able to venture out that direction and do the hike there for the last few years. So there were four of us out there on Monday, and we all hiked for different charities, like you said, and it was an absolutely fantastic day.
Yeah, all right. That makes it sound pretty simple. Yeah. It was a great 100-hole hike, and it was a great day, and we were in Colorado. No, my friend. So I'm following along on Twitter. And there's a reason this is called the 100-hole hike. Is that correct? You're supposed to walk 100 holes of golf, correct?
Well, at least.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that isn't put out there. Well, I'm good. Now people are wondering, what the heck is he talking about? You ended up with, here comes the drum roll. Tell us how many holes you walked and played.
181.
Oh. All right. Here's my first question of many. So you started at what time in the morning?
I teed off at 4:45 in the morning.
I'm guessing it was still, Sean's making a face. Yeah, I know that's early, Sean, but was it dark? Did you have flashlights like 4:45 in the morning?
So the sun is kind of peeking over the tops of the dunes, and you can see a little bit. so usually by about the second or third hole, you're good. But we got to try to maximize as much daylight as we can, you know. So we'll take every little inch of it.
Well, when I saw the final tally, I was getting ready to do something, and I said to the guy I was with, 181 holes, and we started trying to figure out how that was like 18 hours of golf or something. It was almost impossible to do. You finished at when the sun was setting, I think, which in Colorado during this time of year is probably, what, 9:30 or something?
It was about 9 o'clock, and it was pretty dark. We we actually had to break out the glow ball for the final hole.
Ooh, glow ball stuff. Nice.
Yeah.
We don't hear about that on Backspin Golf that often.
I don't know if I had ever heard about it either, but we broke it out, and it was pretty neat.
Now, there are so many things. First of all, how do you train for this?
I don't think you do. I mean, you know, last year I kind of tried to get to the gym more and run more, but I honestly don't think that it really matters. The more Jim and I were talking about this in the car ride out to the club, every year I think it gets easier.
Yeah.
You know, the more you do it, like, you experience certain things each year that you're like, okay, I can cut that out, or I can do this, and I can get more golf holes in. So I really think it's just a mindset of you just have to keep walking, and no matter what you do. I mean, it was almost, you know, my Fitbits. I don't know if you saw my Fitbits.
I wanted to talk about that. I did. Like, yeah, say that again. How many steps?
101,000 change. And like 350 sets of stairs and
8,400 calories, I think I saw.
Yeah, 8,000 calories burned throughout the day.
So, okay, skinny. Go ahead.
So I think that, you know, it's just this mindset. Like, your legs are going to hurt regardless. I mean, you know, that's just a hard thing to train for, especially for, you know, us middle-aged guys that like to play golf. We're not out hitting the gym, or we're not ultra marathoners, or
right.
Most of the guys that do this aren't. So I think regardless, you're going to hurt, you're going to have some pain, and it's just this mindset of you just have to keep walking and hitting golf shots.
It in a way, it kind of is like running a marathon or doing anything like that. So you tee off, you peg your ball on the first tee, and you know you have this whole day ahead of you of, we love to play golf, but this is a little bit different. I saw that Jim caddied for you. Is that right?
Yeah, he did. I had some Ballyneal Club caddies for the first 7 rounds of the day. I had four different caddies throughout the morning that carried from, you know, 1 round to 2.5 rounds.
Right. Now, are you running, are you walking fast? Are you just playing the hole?
You know, it's funny. I get this question a lot, and some new people that were doing the hike for the first time this year, like, well, do you have to run?
Yeah.
And you really don't. Like, my wife has caddied for me in the past for 9 holes here or there, and she's like, I feel like you're running, but you're just kind of walking briskly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't take any practice swings, and you step up and you hit the ball, and you kind of get in a groove.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no running. I even tell my caddies, I'm like, no, there's no running allowed today. We don't do running. So.
Well, it'd be kind of hard to run for, you know, 101,000 steps. But now, in terms of the golf itself, are you playing actual golf? Like, when you hit a ball, I'm sure you never hit a ball out of bounds anything like that. But are you playing by the rules as you're playing? Or if you hit a ball into a hazard, say, do you just drop one and hit it? How closely are you keeping score while you're doing this?
Yeah, so here's the thing about the hike, and I think Jim, you know, really emphasized this from the beginning because he didn't want it to turn into this, like, kind of gimmick.
Right.
So it's play by the rules. You play the ball down. You putt everything out. There's no gimmies. You know, even like the 2-inchers, you putt.
Right.
And so here's the beautiful thing about that I love about Ballyneal. There's no water hazards. And there are no trees. And a lot of the fairways are pretty wide because it gets pretty windy out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can hit one astray and you hit it into the prairie grass and you usually find it. You know, we don't look for 5 minutes. So,
right.
You know, you take a look for like a minute, and if you don't find it, then we drop one.
Right.
So, but yeah, other than that, it's everything is by the rules, which is I think is kind of cool.
It is. And what Jim said was true. This is not a gimmick just to see, you know, we say you played 100 holes. I mean, you're playing 100 holes. And by the way, I just looked at the picture again on Twitter of Ballyneal, and it looks like Ireland. I mean, what an amazing place.
It really is. It's, you know, you wouldn't think you'd find it in northeastern Colorado, but you feel like you're on a different planet out there. It's really special.
We're speaking with Brandon Urban, who is a Lawrencian, Kansas, and in December moved to Minneapolis, but on his Twitter account, it still says Lawrence, Kansas, because he just can't get himself to take that off.
Never going to happen.
Well, good. I like that you stand up for that. there's so much I want to talk to you about that, but I'll call you and we'll talk about all that stuff. But tell us now, this 100-hole hike idea, as I said, was to raise money for different charities. Everybody does it for a different reason. Tell us about yours.
Yeah, so I did mine this year, and this is the second time I've done it for this specific charity. But it's an organization called AXYS, AXYS, and they raise money and awareness, and they help support families and individuals with X and Y chromosome disorders. So my son suffers from Klinefelter syndrome. It's an extra X chromosome, and so there's a lot of different, you know, medical stuff and social things that goes along with that, and we just found out when he was 12, so 4 years ago.
Wow.
And so we didn't have anywhere to look as far as support. We didn't know what we were doing. None of our medical providers knew anything about it. And so AXYS was this great organization that had a ton of resources and three clinics around the country. So we were really just looking for a great way to give back to them, because they've helped us out immensely in the last 4 years.
Well, you are, aside from this 181-hole hike. And by the way, I'm looking at your scores here doing this. This scorecard, you actually have a scorecard for 181 holes?
Yeah, so I had to – so it was funny. My original – so the one you're looking at is transcribed, because the one that I carried with me throughout the day looked like Sanskrit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, because you don't have a lot of time to even write as you're walking, and not enough room for 10 rounds. So I just scribble scores for the last, like, three rounds on the back of the scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's all transcribed. But, yeah, I actually played really well this year. I mean, it was just the perfect day.
Well, now I feel like crap, because I'm looking at some of the scores that you shot. And, you know, when I'm riding in a cart playing 18 holes of golf, I can't shoot these scores. So – the heck with you, pal. I thought I liked you, but the heck with you.
Yeah. It was funny. The 10th round of the day, you asked if Jim caddied for me, and he had texted me on like the 16th hole of my 9th round, and he said, "I'll caddy the 10th round for you," because he knew there was a lot of daylight left. And I'm like, "All right, awesome." I said, "The golf is not pretty." And he got on my bag, and I mean, you look at it, 10th round, we shot an 81. You know, so I birdied the 178th hole of the day, which is pretty cool.
Well, I got to tell you, this segment is one of my favorite segments that I've ever done in 4 years on this show. And you're a PTA president. You're an incredible father and husband. And the fact that you can do this and it all comes back to golf is why I love doing this show, and that I've met you through Twitter and Jim Colton, and bless you. I'm in awe of you, and I mean that.
Well, thanks. We appreciate you continuing to talk about the hike and spreading the word.
Well, hopefully, I know I've said it every year, but I'm going to really try next year to get out there with you and do this.
We would love it.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by French Lick Resort. Visit them online at FrenchLick.com.